It's time now for our ongoing series discussing substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium.
Well, once again, we have some folks here from the Grays Harbor Consortium. Danielle and Colleen, good morning.
Good morning.
What are some of the ways that you treat those kids? Because what kind of issues are permanent? I mean, is it some sort of psychological damage, or is it actually physical damage to the brain, or what exactly happens?
So, especially with alcohol use in pregnancy, it affects the brain.
Yeah. It causes atrophy of the brain.
There are things that just aren't firing in the same way, or they won't ever. And so it's learning the skills. You know, a lot of people who suffer from fetal alcohol, they don't see cause and effect. And so, you know, for you touching the hot thing, you know you're going to get burned, but that person might touch the hot thing 100 times because they don't see the cause. They don't see that touching the hot thing is what led to the burn.
And they have a hard time following like a sequence of things. Mm-hmm. Like you need to do this, this, and this, and they'll go from A to C and skip B when B was pretty important.
Right.
And so what does the alcohol do to the brain that causes that to happen?
Literally causes it to atrophy.
Okay, so in other words, the part of the brain that would take you from you did this, don't do it again, and the connection there does not get made.
Right. So it can be different with each kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, what are some of the ways that you can work around that to maybe get the child a little more able to cope? Are there little tricks of the trade, so to speak, or ways that's done, or is it pretty much you just have to kind of learn that child will have that issue the rest of their life?
I think there are always things you can do to support children in that position, and adults. Adults have fetal alcohol syndrome as well. And some of those things can just be counseling and coaching, mm-hmm. helping them set up processes. We have worked with folks who maybe couldn't see how their house should be kept. They couldn't figure out how to organize that or how to make it happen. And it became overwhelming. The process became overwhelming. So just having a case manager through our program come in with them and help them organize and get things going, and then taking pictures for reference to say, this is what this should look like when it's done. Giving them tools so they can get from point A to point B, and I think having some compassion that not everyone functions on the same page. You know, we're all a little bit different, and we all rely on tools, and helping them figure out what tools work for them.
Yeah. Would one of the ways to do that, like write something down, okay, you're going to do this, and then when you do this, you need to, you know, follow up with this and have everything written out for them, or they can do that on their own, or do they lose the ability to think about, okay, well, this will happen. What will happen? Why I can't write it down because I don't know what will happen if I do this.
That's a bigger scope of a different type of treatment for fetal alcohol-related conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you, I mean, those are folks that are even more susceptible to becoming addicted. So you already have the disorganized brain and various parts depending on how they got affected in vitro. And then you have that person become addicted. It's very difficult.
Now,
very difficult.
What about other substances outside of alcohol? Like, I guess heroin would be one. People that are doing opioids or in general. They're doing stimulants. Do each of those types of substances, when they get into the child, bring a different set of issues when it comes to what they can and can't do? Because alcohol, you were talking about alcohol.
I would like
to
just say that someone who's exposed to substances in birth has no limit.
Right.
Just because you had a parent who chose to use during pregnancy doesn't mean that you have a set of limitations. You are as capable as any other person. And truly, I think, you know, we see people who have children that they use throughout pregnancy, and you would see the child and never know that there was use. And then there's other children who who have a harder time.
So so sometimes, are you saying that it doesn't, nothing happens, or you just, it's not so severe that you notice it when it comes to, you know, drinking when you're pregnant or using drugs when you're pregnant? And I assume how much you and how often you do it would also...
Actually, they don't know whether it's a couple of teaspoons of alcohol or 16 cases in vitro. I think they've narrowed it down to likely outcomes in different phases or different, what's the pregnancy stage
different
is called?
Trimesters.
Trimesters, different trimesters. They've been able to nail some of the things that are likely to happen to the brain in the different trimesters.
And so if you can nip it in the bud, then that's the best way to go if possible.
Yeah. If the longer you're able to be clean and sober during pregnancy, the better for that child. Always.
Well, yes. So if you're the father and you see your spouse using alcohol or other drugs or whatever that, you know, she shouldn't be ingesting, what's the husband or the spouse supposed to do in a case of that kind? How do you help your pregnant spouse not to do those things?
Unfortunately, there's not a one-size-fits-all approach for any of this. And I think what each woman, what each individual experiencing substance use disorder needs is really varied. But I do know that support, openness are really helpful. So if that spouse or partner is not using substances and is able to say, hey, I'm concerned about you, I'm concerned about the things that are happening to our child because of your use, I think that that's a great first step to be able to open that line of communication and then help them seek treatment through any of the wonderful providers we have in our area. You know, all it is a phone call and they check insurance and
right,
set up a screening and can help get folks to the place they need, whether that be inpatient treatment or outpatient treatment.
So say, for instance, can the husband call you guys up and say, hey, I need some help here. How do you go about helping him, or can you, without some sort of legal ramifications?
I don't think there would be legal ramifications. Okay. If somebody made a phone call to us and asked questions.
What about if there's an intervention in the family to talk to someone who is pregnant and is abusing? Is that a good way to go about getting the topic out?
Well, you'd have to have willing participants, first of all.
And so how do you go about doing that?
Well, like you said, if the dad calls in or the potential father calls in and is asking about what he can do, hopefully all of our conversations that we have with someone who's struggling with addiction are coming from an intervening kind of place.
Do you folks do interventions?
I wouldn't say that we do. I don't. Our program doesn't work in intervention. And honestly, an intervention, while is nice, like Colleen said, it has to have a willing participant. Sometimes to someone who's using, who has had past traumas, it can also feel like an attack. And so I think really helping the person feel loved and supported,
yes,
and
absolutely.
Helping them realize that you're concerned about their well-being is important, because if someone tells you how you're living your life is wrong, I mean, it's hard. You don't want to listen to that. And also there has to be a willingness or a desire to change. No one's going to go and it's very uncommon that someone would go forcefully to a treatment and then maintain their abstinence from using substances. It has to be an internal want to change, just like any behavior.
Sure. Well, you know, because you see on TV there's documentaries where the whole family's around and they're just zeroing in on the person that you know is the subject of the intervention, and it gets pretty emotional.
Yeah, and there, you know, more and more there are models of intervention that actually include the entire family.
Mm-hmm.
The expectation is that if we're going to do an intervention on Susie, then each person's going to take a look at what they need to do as well, because you start to look at the enabling that's going on in the family.
Oh, okay.
And that type of thing. So if the utopia of intervention would be that the entire family is getting treated, But when you just bring it down to like a father calling and talking about his pregnant wife or girlfriend that is using and he's concerned, it may just be the conversation with him that you give him some tools and some ways to say things or some information that might be more receptive if he were to take it in a different direction to talk with his girlfriend about it, give him some resources where she could go to get treatment, that type of thing.
On women using, especially women during pregnancy, there's a big fear that they won't be able to be with their child. And so Washington State has really wonderful programs for parenting and pregnant and parenting women to be able to seek treatment while caring for their child.
Right.
Now, it's part of the problem because, I mean, having kids today is not cheap. You know, it's expensive. And you have a lot of young families they're together and there's a pregnancy and they're really not financially prepared for this or maybe and mentally prepared for this. So is that another contributing factor to, doing the wrong things because you really don't have the knowledge of how to handle what is happening to you?
Well, I think it all goes back to the trauma. A lot of people haven't had the healthy experiences. They don't know how to cope in healthy ways. And so, and going back to stressors, pregnancy is a stressor. Having a baby is a stressor. So when you're stressed, you immediately go to those things that you know provide you the relief. And it can be, I mean, we're talking about addiction and substance use disorder, but if you think about it and you want to try to relate, you can think about it and think about all the unhealthy coping skills you may have as a person that isn't substance using. You know, you might veg out in front of the TV for hours at a time, or you might bake a dozen cookies and eat them all. You know, all of those things.
Right. Now, another section you wanted to get into was unsolved issues, trauma, emotional problems, and self-worth. And I imagine self-worth is probably one of the biggest things, because if you don't feel you're worth anything, you don't go about and do some of these things that might help because you think it's a lost cause. Am I kind of describing it right?
Well, so there again, if you come from a dysfunctional childhood, you already are set up to not really have what it takes to have some kind of level of self-esteem or self-worth. Boy, that's a setup. That can be a setup for a variety of types of addiction, not just drug and alcohol. So if the trauma is never looked at, if it's never treated, if it's never addressed, that sets people up. And so then you get into your addiction.
It's a huge change, right? You're choosing to unlearn all the behaviors that you've learned through your experiences. And you have to be able to decide to do that, to unlearn all your learned behaviors and really take a good look at yourself. People who are substance using often aren't just going to detox and then never using substances again. They're doing a lot of work. There's a lot of work that goes into being abstinent from substances. I mean, Colleen, you
absolutely
can speak to a lot of that work.
Yeah. I mean, I was, while we were sitting in the waiting room waiting to be seen by you today, mm-hmm. Doug, I jotted down the signs that were in the little waiting room. You know, there was things like follow your dreams, dream big, believe you can, and you're halfway there. Live the life you love. Love the life you live. Be amazing. Hustle. Heart will set you apart. Work hard. Stay humble. These are not the affirmations of the addict's life. These are things that are unattainable in their estimation. A lot of folks have been, you know, if we're talking about stigma, the stigma of being an addict or an alcoholic, it's prevalent in our society. It has been for, you know, probably centuries. And I think there's been steps taken in the last 20 years that have helped with that, but it still is a problem being stigmatized and by society. And then you take the addict who is addicted and who's not functioning normally in life. They are so hard on themselves. They have stigmatized themselves. So you're asking a system to basically get in there and help them to stop stigmatizing themselves so that they can even formulate a plan so they can be in recovery. But these things right here, the follow your dreams, a lot of folks who grew up in dysfunctional families don't even have a dream. They don't even know what it means to dream. They've been surviving most of their life. And the drugs that they've taken have helped them survive, have helped them cope. So it becomes like a coping mechanism. And then we're in recovery, we're asking them to set those things aside and learn new skills and learn to dream again.
How can the Grace Harbor Consortium help in leading somebody that direction? What do you do? How do you?
Well, I think one of the bigger messages is that they want to get out, or that we would like to get out that work in this field, is that this is treatable. Addiction is treatable, period. We just have to have the person show up, mm-hmm. or sometimes we go out to them. There's been different processes that have been put in place that make it to where we can go out to them now, where before we had to sit and wait. People are being referred through courts, through police departments, through PCAPs, through health departments, we're getting referrals from everywhere now, from individuals.
And I think just, you know, we're here to help end stigma, and Colleen and I were having a nice conversation before this interview, just about the fact that there's so much shame around use. Even people walking around that you meet day to day that you wouldn't ever know had a history of addiction, they're out there, and we've been conditioned to be shameful about that. Mm-hmm. And so they're not saying, it's okay, I've been through this too, we can get through it, let me help lead you to some resources. In fact, when you're using, a lot of times clients that I've worked with will look at me or other people that they work with and just think, this person's got it all together. Yeah. And they don't realize that a lot of times the people they encounter have had history of use as well.
So are there times then when somebody goes through the process of kicking the habit that they're basically, they think different, they're a different person, and they just... They wouldn't even be recognized as somebody that had an addiction problem before?
Oh, absolutely. I've seen people that have, you know, 10, 20, 30 years of recovery that don't even look like the person that I knew in childhood or in teenage years, that were really lost back then.
So do you have, like if someone wants help or they know somebody that needs help, do they go to you guys? Who do they go to get hooked up with the help that they need?
There's so many entry points.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think there's like 7 SUD, substance use disorder agencies that provide the services for SUD in our Grace Harbor County now, where for a while there was only 1 or 2.
So what would be, what are those, or at least some of them?
Oh, Lifeline, CIHS, Columbia Wellness, Harbor Crest.
Your primary care provider.
Yeah, primary care providers are doing some referrals.
They can help connect you. I don't have a list of all of the consortium members right now, but I know if someone were to call PCAP or Parent Child Assistance Program where I work and they didn't qualify for our program, I would still refer them to any of the other agencies that might be able to assist them.
Join us next Monday morning at 8:40 a.m. for our continuing discussion on substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium, exclusively on 103.5 FM and 1450 a.m. KBKW. To hear archived discussions, log on to gograysharbor.com.